Hello, friend. Thank you so much for downloading this podcast, and I hope you hear something truly, I mean this from the bottom of my heart, something that edifies, equips, enlightens, encourages, and then gently but firmly gets you out there into the marketplace of ideas. I so appreciate your taking the time to listen. But before you start the broadcast, let me just take a moment and explain that this month's truth tool is called SEEK, S-E-E-K, written by my friend David Robertson, my favorite Scottish apologist who is currently serving the Lord in Australia. He comes and visits with us once a month. And he wrote a book called Ask, and now he's written a follow-up book called Seek, Real Word Answers to Real World Questions. And so he literally goes through a whole series of questions like, is there ever a good lie? Or does the Bible have mistakes? Or what does the Bible say about climate change? Or what's the difference between capitalism and communism? And the list goes on and on and on. So it is a fabulous reference book that I know you're going to want to put in your legacy library. So if you'd like a copy of Seek, and we are listener-supported radio, I'd love to send one to you when you give a gift of any amount to support In the Market with Janet Parshall. Simply call 877-JANET-58, that's 877-JANET-58, and offer a gift of any amount. We'll send you a copy of David's book, Seek. Or if you'd rather do it online, go to inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org. Scroll to the bottom of the page. There's the cover. It has a brain on the cover, so you can't miss it. Click on the cover of the book, make your gift right through the website, and we'll send you a copy of Seek by David Robertson. Great tool to have, one of those important little volumes in your ready reference library, and I know you're going to be blessed. By the way, when you're on the website, you might want to consider being a Parshall partner. Those are people who give every single month at a level of their own choosing. They always get whatever the truth tool is that particular month. And in addition to that, they get a newsletter that contains an audio piece from me as well. So Parshall partner or just this month's truth tool, either way, it helps us financially to keep moving forward. 877-JANET-58, 877-JANET-58, or online at inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org. Now, please enjoy the broadcast.
Here are some of the news headlines we're watching.
By the time the conference was over, the president won a pledge.
So Americans worshiping government over God.
An extremely rare safety move by a major.
17 years the Palestinians and Israelis negotiated.
This idea of Moshe is not
Hi, friends. Welcome to In the Market with Janet Parshall. A very happy Monday to you. Well, it was something. And what a reminder that he made all of those planets and stars, hung them in the heavens, and gave them names. And in the midst of all that magnificent, where he can make the moon move in front of the sun and darken the sky in the middle of the afternoon, I, for one, was reminded of his magnificence, his power, his authority, his glory, and his love, because in the middle of all of that fancy stuff going on in the heavenlies, I am reminded, because the book of Romans tells me so, that nothing can separate me from the love of God. It is indeed a happy Monday. This is the day which the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we're going to start by taking a look at Israel. Can you believe this has been going on for 6 months? And I have to tell you that pressure continues to mount against Israel, this time, sadly, coming from the United States. And the Israelis have been reacting to some of the demands made by the White House. But before I go into that, I want you to hear a news story that was put together by I-24. This is the big news outlet in Israel. And I want you to hear their thoughts as Israel marks 6 months since the October 7th massacre. Have a listen.
October the 7th, 2023. A date that will be etched into the memories of every Israeli, and a day that will be recounted to every Israeli child for generations.
Citizens of Israel, we are at war, not in an operation or in a round of fighting, but at war.
At 6:30 a.m. on Saturday the 7th of October 2023, during the Jewish holiday of Simchat Torah, Israelis were awoken by an unprecedented barrage of over 3,000 rockets fired from the Gaza Strip into Israel, which Hamas referred to as Operation Al-Aqsa Storm. Whilst this was unfolding, around 3,000 Hamas terrorists infiltrated Israel via land, sea, and air, breaking through the Israeli border. The IDF warned people in the Israeli community surrounding the Gaza border to remain in their safe rooms for fear of a further infiltration, but they were too late. The terrorists had already begun their massacre. killing, raping, and taking hostage civilians in their homes, soldiers at military bases, and the Israeli police. Almost every community around the border was affected, with some being completely destroyed beyond recognition. The most harm was caused to Kibbutz Be'eri, where over 130 people were killed. Nachal Oz, where over 100 were killed in attacks on the kibbutz and the military base. Kfar Aza, where over 40 were killed, as well as 10 other communities which were infiltrated. But the greatest massacre occurred at the Nova Music Festival on the grounds of Kibbutz Re'im, where over 370 partygoers, predominantly young men and women, were butchered and dozens abducted into the Gaza Strip. Throughout the entire day, horrified Israelis were glued to their televisions or smartphones as new footage from the sites of the massacres circulated. Videos of Hamas terrorists shooting at kibbutzim, firing at partygoers, and people being dragged kicking and screaming into Gaza became seared into the minds of people around the world. In total, around 1,200 Israelis and foreign nationals were killed in the onslaught, and over 250 people were kidnapped, with ages ranging from 86 years old to a mere 9 months. The events on October the 7th shocked the world, with leaders flocking to Israel to show support and solidarity, and candlelit vigils being held across the globe. But despite overwhelming support, the world was on edge for what Israel would do next.
The enemy will pay an unprecedented price. We are at war, and we will win it.
And a price has definitely been paid. 3 weeks later, IDF forces invaded the Gaza Strip with two goals: to destroy Hamas and to bring back the hostages. In the over 5 months of fighting since, Israel claims to have killed over 13,000 Hamas militants, around 40% of its combat manpower, and have arrested over 2,000. Out of the 253 people taken hostage on October the 7th, 112 hostages have returned to Israel alive. 105 through a ceasefire prisoner swap with Hamas, 4 from a unilateral Hamas release, and 3 through IDF operations. The bodies of 12 hostages have been repatriated back to Israel, leaving 133 in the Gaza Strip, 129 from October the 7th, and 4 who were abducted prior to that date. Talks for a further release deal have remained sporadic and, thus far, unsuccessful. But as the months have gone on and the fighting has intensified, pressure on Israel has grown, with international condemnation stemming from the humanitarian crisis that has unfolded in Gaza, compounded by the airstrike that killed 7 foreign aid workers, and the public spats between Benjamin Netanyahu and his US counterpart Joe Biden, furthering Israel's isolation on the global stage. But 6 months on, with Hamas still existing and 133 hostages remaining in the Gaza Strip, the war continues, with the images from that dark Saturday still fresh in the minds of every Israeli.
Only 6 months after what was their 9/11, two requirements. That's Israel has said this from the onset. Hamas must be rooted out completely and all of the hostages must be returned. You just heard in that very succinct encapsulation of the events of October 7th that there are still 133 hostages that are still being held by the terrorist organization. The piece rightfully also pointed out the mounting international pressure, and sadly, so much of it now coming from the United States. I believe that we turn our back on Israel at our own peril. And it was interesting because if you look at some of the voices that are now speaking back to the administration, former Israeli ambassador to the UN and Knesset member Danny Danon told an Israeli media outlet regarding Gaza, and I quote, "Our mistake was a few months ago when we listened to the U.S. That's a strong remark. Danon rejected his political opponent, Benny Gantz's call for new elections, something, by the way, that really is disallowed right now. The elections in Israel are not slated to be for 2 more years, but somehow they think changing leaders in the middle of this war is going to be beneficial. That's a suspicious, rather interesting statement. And by the way, Danon insisted that no one in leadership, from Netanyahu to the heads of the security in the cabinet, should be replaced because of the U.S. threats. From the left, a recent Bloomberg article quotes former Israeli Labor Party lawmaker Daniel Ben-Simon as saying, even for left liberals, there is a sense of isolation and frustration. The right will tell you this is the nature of being Jewish, but even people who hate Netanyahu aren't feeling they can count on the world community. I bring that to your attention so that you and I, as people of the Word and people who understand we have been grafted on, that we would pray continually for the peace of Jerusalem. Back after this. The Bible has the answers to questions being asked by the world, questions about abortion and heaven and even climate change. That's why I've chosen Seek as this month's truth tool. Discover how the Bible offers real word answers to real world questions. Ask for your copy of Seek when you give a gift of any amount to In the Market. Call 877-JANET-58, that's 877-JANET-58, or go to inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org. We always enjoy spending time with Bill Gertz. He is a national security correspondent for the Washington Times. He's been with the Times since 1985. He has written multiple books. More than half of them now are national bestsellers. And one of his books is entitled Deceiving the Sky, Inside Communist China's Drive for Global Supremacy. I just keep pushing that, although there isn't a book that Bill's written that I wouldn't recommend to you. But this one is so eye-opening because you really, like an octopus, begin to understand the tendril outreaches of the communist government. Business, entertainment, corporations, farming, land buys, weaponry, building the military. In fact, it was interesting because on Friday I shared with you that China wants to be at the front of the line when it comes to AI. And just imagine thinking how that would be used militarily to create perhaps a super soldier. So there's much to talk about China, but we're going to start in our conversation with Bill Gertz by taking a look at Russia and something known as the Havana Syndrome. So, Bill, let me start first by thanking you from the bottom of my heart for the gift of your time, your superb work. Thank you for everything that you do at the Washington Times. I've got a link to GertzFile.com so people can read your articles there. Your Inside the Ring pieces are fabulous. Your podcast is wonderful. So we're just so grateful that you're with us. But you wrote about this Havana Syndrome, which reminds me of something out of a movie, by the way. And whether or not there's any linkage between this beam or whatever it might be and this so-called Havana Syndrome. So would you start by telling us what the syndrome is and what intelligence officers are saying about it?
Yeah, sure. First, always glad to be on the program. Havana Syndrome first surfaced around 2016 when U.S. diplomats and intelligence personnel in Havana, Cuba, they were at our consulate there, our embassy, and they began experiencing this head trauma, this brain strained noises that actually inflicted damage on their brains. This was followed by other incidents in Guangzhou, China. So it happened to, several times. And guess what? It's continuing to happen. There are multiple reports that these things are still happening. The problem is the U.S. intelligence community, in its latest annual threat assessment, came out and said that they think it's very unlikely that these incidents are the result of some type of enemy action, some type of hostile attack. And they didn't say in this annual threat assessment what they thought it was, but other intelligence reports since then have claimed that they're blaming vague environmental factors or pre-existing medical conditions for all of these things happening. And that's just not the case. And the latest was that CBS 60 Minutes came out a couple Sundays ago and had a major investigative piece that they did with Der Spiegel, the German publication, and also, excuse me, a Russian dissident publication, and said that there were indications that Russia was linked. They quoted a defense intelligence agency analyst who actually worked on the problem, who said, look, I looked at this closely and everything told me that it looks like the Russians are doing this. The 60 Minutes piece played down the fact that this happened in China and that the Chinese have already announced that they're selling, as part of a weapon, a sonic weapon. So the people that I've talked to who have studied this think that it's either a combination of radio frequency energy or microwaves. No, not microwaves are unlikely, but a sonic type weapon, some type of an acoustic weapon that can be focused and targeted on individuals. And the goal is to try and disrupt the decision-making process of these people.
You know, Bill, it's interesting because you and I have talked in the past. You've written about this, by the way, that China's coming up with some rather atypical weaponry. And one of them is talking about going after the mind in particular, taking away decision-making skills was one of the weapons you said that they were dealing with. So it's not beyond the pale of possibility, given what they're already trying to develop, that somehow there would be a linkage there. But a couple of things as a background. Number one, when these brain attacks take place, is the damage permanent or is it temporary?
It's not clear. It looks like in the majority of cases that it does cause some kind of brain disruption, although even that is being challenged now. There was an article that came out in the Journal of American Medical Association claiming that there wasn't brain damage. But an earlier Journal of the American Medical Association study a couple of years ago said, yeah, that it does look like there's brain injury. So it's somewhat of a mystery, but I think it's becoming clearer that this notion that there's somehow environmental factors or pre-existing medical condition from some of these people is causing this. It's obviously some type of an attack. And the fact, and a lot of the people who have experienced these injuries are pretty upset that the government's not really backing them. And
wow.
Of course, the White House, the State Department, the CIA, they're all saying, oh, we're doing everything we can to get to the bottom of this. But in reality, it doesn't look like they are.
And that's heartbreaking. By the way, I have to laugh, and I do so using the brain that God has given me when they think that this might be an environmental factor. That's like a person on The View recently, where all intellectuals gather for good conversation, who said that the eclipse was directly attributable to climate change. Sorry, must have skipped class that day. But going back to this environmental stuff, that raises another question. And I'm assuming, hopefully, that the powers that be who are tracking this, and they need to be tracking this. Well, you talked about Havana, the derivation of that you explained to us, but where, if at all, is this manifest itself? Any other U.S. embassies, any other military sites? Is the U.S. always the recipient? Are other countries complaining about this?
Yes, to all of those questions. There have been incidents in other places. There have actually been reported incidents in the United States. In fact, 60 Minutes interviewed an active duty FBI agent, a woman who was only identified as Carrie. And she said that she was investigating a Russian counterintelligence case and experienced this brain injury effect in two places in the United States, in Florida and California.
Wow. Wow. To be continued for sure. Thank you for writing about this, Bill. When we come back, Bill's written an awful lot of things since the last time we were together. We've got more to talk about. How about, I bet you knew where we were going, how about we take up China in a more definitive way when we return? Bill Gertz is with us. Check out his books. Deceiving the Sky is one of them. Absolutely fabulous. Back after this. We are visiting with Bill Gertz, national security correspondent for The Washington Times. He is a best-selling author. He's a guest lecturer at the FBI National Academy in Quantico, at the CIA in Langley, Virginia, the National Defense University at Fort McNair in Washington, D.C. The list goes on and on and on. Follow him at GertzFile.com and check out his books. Start with Deceiving the Sky, Inside Communist China's Drive for Global Supremacy. Bill, you wrote about this a few days ago, and on the one hand, I was stunned, and on the other hand, I said to myself, I shouldn't be surprised. What now is the linkage between the CCP and Hamas?
It's very interesting. Yeah, a contact of mine did a report for a think tank, and he basically outlined in pretty much detail that Israeli defense forces in their sweep through Gaza have uncovered large caches of Chinese-made weapons, including machine guns and rocket launchers and things like that. And the name of the person is Gailali Lilantis, very difficult name, it's a Greek name. And he did a really good job in showing this. He said even one of the leaders of Hamas actually received training, was sent when he was part of the Palestine Liberation Organization a number of years ago. He was sent to China for training in weapons and tactics. So there does seem, and of course the Chinese government has denied that, and they've been able to do that because they're very good at keeping secrets and doing secret collaboration with these kind of movements. But they've been known to support groups like Hamas, who they regard as helping their cause, which is, again, weakening the United States so that China can ultimately try to take over the world.
Wow. You took me exactly where I wanted to go. So let me go to the last part of your statement. And that is, how would China vis-a-vis, I'm guessing that there's a linkage. This goes to the axis of evil. So China, obviously, would have to be working with Iran. Iran is backdooring. This is a proxy war with Israel and Iran, and it's coming through Hamas. We understand that. And by the way, when the weapons say made in China, it's pretty hard to say that they weren't Chinese weapons in the first place. But going to the transcendence of what you just said and to their stated goal of global hegemony, which is exactly what Deceiving the Sky is all about, how would furthering unrest in the Middle East speak to the agenda of the communist Chinese government to have global domination? How do they see untoppling Israel as being a part of that?
Well, yes. Okay. So first off, the Chinese Supreme Leader Xi Jinping has stated since he came to power in 2012-2013 that his goal is national rejuvenation, but this is not rejuvenation in the sense of making China better. This is what he regards as putting China as back as the Middle Kingdom. That is, the ancient Chinese believed that China was the Middle Kingdom between heaven and earth. And so they have this hegemonistic view. And you combine that with Marxism-Leninism, which is the driving force behind Chinese expansionism today. They've done a number of initiatives, the Global Security Initiative, the Belt and Road Initiative. All of these are ideologically driven to promote this idea that China has to become the dominant power in the entire world. And in order for China to do that, it needs to replace the U.S.-led international order, which is based on freedom, democracy, and free markets. And so they want to completely change the entire world system. And in order to do that, they'll do whatever it takes at whatever location to further weaken the United States. Supporting Hamas could be a way to weaken Israel, who is a key U.S. ally, in fact, the only democratic nation really in the Middle East that is very closely aligned with the United States. So they see this as a backdoor way of weakening the United States.
Wow. So as I said before, if you view Iran as doing a proxy war vis-a-vis Hamas against Israel, you've got China doing a proxy war against the United States using the same trapdoor. But here's where it gets interesting, and this is like playing battleship. So if you've got China desiring global hegemony, what's going to happen when they meet up against, for example, the regime in Iran, who also has made a declaration for global hegemony, only this time there is theologically based? China might talk about the kingdom between heaven and earth, but they're not referring to it in the same sort of theological terms that most of us here in the West would understand. However, the Iranian idea is about bringing about an apocalypse, one of the reasons for fostering nuclear warfare and its growth, so that eventually their Messiah, their Mahdi, can make an appearance, and eventually the end game there is Islamic global domination. What happens when you have two entities, both of whom are declaring global domination? Common sense says only one of those dogs can win in that fight. What's going to happen?
Well, I think it would come down to literally the strategic balance of power. And right now, the correlation of strategic balance of power between the world and China, it's shifting in China's favor. They've stolen Western technology. They've retrenched from hardline Marxism, Leninism for many years and are now reinvigorating Marxism-Leninism. And this gives them a tremendous both ideological power as well as both physical, real, raw power. And they're building up their military forces. They're building up their nuclear forces so that they will be basically, in the future, they could be unchallenged by anyone, whether it's Iran or the United States or any other nation.
The last time we were together, you had written a piece talking about China spending in the billions, with a B, billions, to continue to build their military. When we come back, let me ask you a quick question, if I can, Bill, about artificial intelligence and how China will, not if, will use that technology to foster and to build the world's largest military operation. Bill Gertz is with us. He happens to be a superb columnist. He's with the Washington Times, a position he's held since 1985. More with Bill Gertz right after this. The Bible says the Word of God illuminates our walk through life. It's a lamp to our feet and a light to our path. Without it, we stumble and fall. In the Market with Janet Parshall is designed to help you look at the headlines of the day through the lens of Scripture. When you become a Parshall partner, you help to make this broadcast possible. And as a Parshall partner, you'll receive exclusive benefits. So why not become a Parshall partner today? Call 877-JANET-58 or go to inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org. Always a privilege to spend time with Bill Gertz, national security correspondent for the Washington Times, the author of multiple books, most of them bestsellers, by the way. He's got a fabulous podcast as well, Deceiving the Sky. I'll say it again, one of the many books he's authored, but this is such a riveting book. I've said it before, I'll say it again, don't read it before you turn the lights out because you'll be up all night. It's an amazing story that really points out the very entrenched way in which communist China is moving toward its stated goal of global supremacy, which is stunning. If I can, I'm going to go to China and AI in a minute, Bill, but I want to go back to finish off the piece that you wrote about the linkage between Hamas and communist China and the fact that there is weaponry that was found there. And someone who did a report for a think tank that really wrote down some of the events that have happened in order. And one of them dealt with an individual. I'm probably going to say his name wrong, but he was a Hamas military wing leader who is suspected of orchestrating the October 7th attack on Israel. Now, we've just passed the 6 months. I started today's broadcast with a report from I-24 in Israel, who gave this very sharp encapsulation of the events that took place on that day, a day which Israelis will never forget. It was tantamount to their 9/11. But this man, by the way, was sent by the PLO to China, Mohammed Deif or Dife, I don't know how you say it, but talk to me about him and his linkage and his marriage and what happened.
Well, he was the military wing leader of Hamas, who, as you said, was suspected of orchestrating the October 7th terror attack. And in 1996, he was sent by the PLO to study artillery and rocketry at the PLA, the People's Liberation Army, and their section is called the General Armament Department of Ordnance Engineering. It's in a place called Xizhong in Hebei Province. During his time there, he married two Chinese Muslim women from Sarta and brought them to Gaza in 2000 after he completed his study, according to the report. And he's believed to be the key channel between the Chinese Communist Party and the Hamas leadership in Gaza.
That is absolutely stunning. And you say that the wives were very much used to facilitate this channel of communication between the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, its leadership, and what was going on with Hamas. That's chilling when you think about it. I mean, I think for most of us who don't study geopolitics and aren't listening and watching what's going on the world stage, you would see communist China and Hamas as two diverse and separate problematic entities, both of whom have their own idea of what the world should look like and are willing to use any means necessary to get there. But to see this kind of linkage, it's really stunning to me. Do we know, and this is a terrible question to ask, but the I-24 report that we just listened to talked about how much of Hamas has been eliminated. Do we know if the mastermind, if this man is in fact that mastermind, if whether or not he has been eradicated since Israel started to defend itself after these massacre attacks?
I don't know the answer to that. Obviously, I would say that he is definitely a target of the Israeli Defense Forces, since if he's the guy that masterminded the attack. The Israelis have been very successful in eliminating large numbers of Hamas militants and terrorists and managed to basically take them off the battlefield. Their stated goal has been very clear. They want to destroy Hamas for what it did in this horrendous, horrible attack of October 7th of last year.
Exactly. If I may, and I promise we're going to come back to China, but now there really is a linkage. So in some respects, we are still talking about China, given the fact that they are playing a role in what's going on in the Middle East right now. What, because your thing is national defense and security, what are we being told? Now, there's the Mr. Kirby presentation when he's doing the briefers from the Pentagon. But obviously, the Iranian government is going to do something to retaliate. I'm hearing that the Israeli consulates are on high alert. What else do we know? And again, they're looking at the timing at the end of Ramadan as being perhaps an inflection point in all of this. Give me your thoughts.
Well, the U.S. government has also indicated that they've somehow signaled or messaged the Iranian government that if they attack any U.S. interests in the Middle East or elsewhere, that the U.S. is prepared to act against Iran. So things are pretty tense over there right now. Like I said, the Israelis were able to kill the Hezbollah leader. Very key, taking him off the terrorist battlefield was very significant. The Iranians argued that this was a violation of the Geneva Accords on diplomatic relations. But of course, look at all of the attacks that Iran has conducted against embassies and consulates around the world, including killing Americans in Lebanon by bombing the embassy there, taking our hostages in Tehran, blowing up the Israeli embassy in Buenos Aires. So this is payback. And the Israelis, I feel, were completely justified in carrying out that attack. So I'm not sure the Iranians will retaliate. They have said they are, but we'll have to wait and see how it plays out. But surely tensions are pretty high in the Middle East right now.
Yes. And I thank you for underscoring that. And for those of us who believe that we're to pray for those in authority, this is exactly what we need to be doing right now. And speaking of those in authority, you wrote about this, and I'm so glad you did, because there was a phone call between our president and President Xi. What did they discuss? Because obviously this goes to something you and I have discussed for decades, Bill, which is this very uneven relationship that we have in the United States with China. We, our failure to see them as the largest military threat to the United States is something that our ignorance speaks to our own potential peril here. So what was the outcome of that conversation, as much as you know?
Well, it's very interesting. Yeah, this was a phone call between Xi Jinping and President Biden, and the only information that we have came from pretty dry official statements, or what the White House calls a readout of the call. There was no indication in this readout from the White House that the president did anything to pressure China against its aggressive activities in the South China Sea or its aggressive military coercion and efforts of coercion against Taiwan. Threats against Japan over the Senkakus. It wasn't in there. It wasn't stated clearly. The most we had was that the phone call was described as candid and constructive. This is basically a part of the detente policy that the White House is seeking with China, built based on two meetings, one in November 2022 between Xi Jinping and Biden in Bali, Indonesia, and then just more recently in November of last year in Woodside, California, when Xi and Biden met. They're trying to do detente. It certainly looks an awful lot like appeasement. There's not enough being done to push back against these massive Chinese incursions against Taiwan, threats that they're making. And just anyone who has even a cursory reading of Chinese propaganda, the Chinese are engaged in a Cold War, and yet the president and the White House insist we're not in a Cold War. And yet we have the military, our military leaders are talking about China engaged in gray zone warfare, which is warfare below the level of kinetic attacks And we're seeing this happening, not just against the U.S. and whether they're trying to run our surveillance aircraft out of Asia or they're threatening the Philippines. That's a particularly tense area right now where the Chinese have been using water cannon and other means to ram Philippine vessels that are trying to resupply a grounded ship on Second Thomas Shoal in the Spratlys. These disputed islands in the South China Sea. So, things are very tense with China, and the White House is taking an appeasement approach. They call it a responsible approach to it. And they sent the Treasury Secretary over there, Janet Yellen, who's considered one of the most pro-Beijing officials in the entire Biden administration. And she went there and made two-handed statements. On the one hand, this, on the one hand, that. On the one hand, they want to engage with China. On the other hand, they're going to protect U.S. national security by preventing Chinese theft of technology. As far as I can tell, there has not been a lot done to block China from stealing our technology, which the White House estimated a number of years ago was in the range of $250 billion to $600 billion annually in stolen intellectual property.
Wow.
And so, no nation can survive. No nation that relies so heavily on its technology can survive with that loss. And we have not seen, in fact, the FBI director has given testimony where he said that the Chinese are stealing more technology than any other, than all of the other nations targeting our technology combined.
Stunning. Absolutely stunning. When we come back, I would love for you to address, because you have to follow the breadcrumbs here. So our president has this conversation with President Xi. And as you point out, the only thing that we're given as a dry read is it was, quote, candid and constructive. And yet, a few days after their phone call, White House National Security Communication Advisor John Kirby talks about Taiwanese independence and makes, at least from my vantage point, a stunning statement about where the U.S. stands on Taiwan and its right to independence. I'd like to get your take on that, Bill, when we return. I think that's very important. And I promise I'm going to squeeze in one way or another your take on China making the declaration, because there was a huge gathering of AI experts and China has said declaratively, we're going to lead on this. Doesn't surprise me at all. You've taught me that nothing happens in China without it being run through the military. If they want to be at the head of artificial intelligence, how would that intersect with China's military in their goal to be A, the largest military entity on planet Earth, and B, global hegemony? Back after this. We're talking with Bill Gertz, national security correspondent for The Washington Times. He's a best-selling author. He's got a great podcast. We got an email from a listener by the name of Mike who said, I've only got one question about China taking over the world. If they do, what are they going to do after that? There's no more worlds to conquer. Excuse me. So there's nothing left to do anymore. So there's nothing left to live for. How do you respond to him, Bill?
Well, I think that the threat posed by China is existential to our way of life, our faith. Everything that we value is under threat right now. And I think the key to understanding that was a book that was published probably a couple decades ago in China called Unrestricted Warfare. And in it, two Chinese colonels went into great detail about how China has to win using every means necessary, including terrorism, financial warfare, biological weapons, and the like. So this is what we're up against. And again, the reason it's so dangerous is because communist ideology is atheistic at its core. Mm-hmm. And that is what has caused mass death of every place that has been under communism, and China being the most significant example, where the death toll from communism has been estimated by academics to be anywhere from 60 to 80 million people who died. And the regime is still in power. The same regime that caused those deaths is still in power and is now seeking to take over the world.
Yeah, excellent answer. Thank you for that. So let me go to John Kirby, because this conversation, this statement, by the way, was made at a briefer a few days after President Biden had his phone call with President Xi of China. You and I have talked about Taiwan a lot, that we believe, at least I thought historically up to this point, that it was a sovereign nation and had a right to exist as such. Square that off with China's declaration that they will subsume Taiwan and make it part of the Chinese government, and that they have made threats that any move against Taiwan or to protect Taiwan is deemed to be a move against China. But Kirby said that this current administration does not support the independence of the nation of Taiwan. Is that a shift in our position with Taiwan?
No, this is boilerplate language that has been used repeatedly. And it's basically a, as I mentioned, a sop to Chinese propaganda. The Chinese claim that the United States is supporting independence, formal independence. The reality is, the real question is not independence. The real question is sovereignty. And about a year or so ago, the Biden administration, State Department, came out and said, we do not say that China has sovereignty over Taiwan. We've never said that. And it's wrong for the Chinese to claim that we've said that. So it gets very complicated. In fact, one expert told me they describe it as the theology of Taiwan, because the policies are so arcane. But it was unfortunate that Henry Kissinger, when he negotiated the diplomatic recognition of Beijing by the United States, they de-recognized Taiwan and they left ambiguous the status of Taiwan. And that's kind of where we are now. And China's making blunt statements that it plans to take over the island militarily, if necessary, by 2027 to 2030. And so tensions are high in that reason, just as they are in the South China Sea. But the U.S. has never recognized China's sovereignty over Taiwan. And that's key. And this was just, again, publicly stated by the State Department probably, you know, a number of months ago. So that's very important. But there's a big fight over it. The Chinese are rattling their sabers. They've been conducting exercises. They've been threatening the island. They've been pressuring Taiwan's allies that have recognized it rather than Beijing as their recognition for China. So it's an ongoing problem, one of the very hot spots right now in the world.
Wow. And again, shortly after this phone call between the two leaders, China sends warplanes and boats to surround Taiwan. So they're very serious in their position. But like you say, this is a complex situation. And if I were to be asked forthright, what is the U.S. position on Taiwan right now? I don't think I could articulate it, because I think there's a philosophical idea of support, but I don't know if we'd put any muscle into it if they were ever threatened as a sovereign nation. So I don't know. As you said, this is, I'm sure, the subject of very robust internal conversations. Let me go back to this idea. Please. No, you were going to say something. Please go ahead.
Let me comment. Yeah. Last fall, I traveled to Hawaii and gave a talk on this subject to the officials of the Indo-Pacific Command. They had a conference there, and it was very interesting. I made the point that there are two recommendations. One is that we should formally recognize Taiwan as an independent nation, and this is a position that has been advocated by former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Others, China experts who I've talked to, said that no, we should continue the ambiguous policy, because ambiguity serves our interest, because the People's Liberation Army can't find an excuse or a reason to conduct military operations against Taiwan because we have this ambiguous policy. Mm-hmm. Will we defend them? Will we not defend them? How much defensive arms will we give them? How much close relations will we have with them? You know, our policy is spelled out in the 1979 Taiwan Relations Act.
Yes.
So it has the force of law, and it can't be changed by executive fiat. So those are the two positions that people are taking and what we should do about Taiwan. Some say we should just go out and say, hey, we'll recognize it and call China's bluff. And others say ambiguity serves to deter the PLA from attacking Taiwan.
Well, if you're a subscriber to the latter school of thought, there's nothing ambiguous about saying the U.S. doesn't support Taiwan's independence. And that makes me very nervous. But I understand why it was said because of your excellent explanation. So let me, if I can, just because I'll have people sending me emails. China is at the front of the line, wants to use the advances in AI, wants to be a world leader in AI. Drop this in the context of the military. What would that mean?
Oh, it would be horrible because they will take the human out of the decision-making process for the use of weapons. And if you look at their value system, they do not value human life the way we in the West do. We have a Judeo-Christian system and we value human life. The Chinese do not value human life and plan to conduct warfare, like I said, unrestricted warfare in the future.
Wow. Using AI. Oh, Bill, there's never a shortage of things to talk about. And I have to tell you, our conversations are some of the fastest I have on radio. Always enlightening, always insightful, always thought-provoking. Thank you for the stellar work you continue to do. Friends, Deceiving the Sky, Inside Communist China's Drive for Global Supremacy. I'd start with that book. If you want to read his columns on a regular basis, Inside the Ring, GertzFile.com. You can also sign up, get all the good stuff from the Washington Times, because that's where you're going to find Bill Gertz. Bill, thank you from the bottom of my heart. Friends, thank you. We'll see you next time on In the Market with Janet Parshall.